No matter where you are in the Catholic Church, we're clearly in a crisis. And a lot of people are saying that this is not related to homosexuality in the priesthood. Today, we're going to look at several of the scandals. We're going to look at the role of homosexuality. We're going to look at how homosexuality has taken over the seminaries and even the episcopate, maybe even over 51% of bishops in the world, as some claim. Today with me is my co-host, Timothy Gordon, and we're going to talk about the homo heresy, this problem of Sodom and Gomorrah in the sacred priesthood, as long ago St. Peter Damian discussed and even challenged the Pope on. Today we're going to dive right into that. Timothy, how are you this morning?
I'm excellent. Aside from a little cold I'm combating, how are you?
Me too, same thing. So we've been seeing all of these scandals. Of course, there's Cardinal McCarrick. There was the really crazy one, that what everyone's calling the cocaine-fueled orgy. You got the notes on that, in case people haven't heard about this?
Yeah.
With Monsignor Luigi.
Luigi Capozzi, yeah. in the apartment arranged for him, the apartment at the Holy Office, arranged by Pope Francis himself and directly intervened on by Cardinal Coco, one of our favorites. Cardinal, we need to make a favorite list. Yeah, that was in the summer of 2017, and I remember when it happened. I remember reading the LifeSite article at about 5 my time, and it was, I mean, that's one of those red pill moments in the history of me. You know, people, since we've been doing these videos, like I said, people will ask, well, how, you know, when did you start red pilling? It was long ago, but there are also moments throughout the way. And this was one of those moments. You're reading the facts on the LifeSite article, and it's literally a cocaine and gay prostitute filled orgy at the Holy Office, which is to say the CDF. Cardinal Mueller had wanted this to do something related to his job, which is he was the prefect of the Holy Office, the CDF. Couldn't get it. Francis said, no, I have to give this to Cardinal Coco. Cardinal Coco Almario had gotten on behalf of this young man, Luigi Capozzi. We can show a picture of the young man.
There he is.
Yep. Be ashamed of yourself, Sean. But It shocks the conscience, right? I mean, it's not quite the same thing as having an orgy at the sanctuary, but it is at the Holy Office. And of course, only later, and I call some credit here. At the time, I said, I wonder if Cardinal Coco was there himself. I said it to my wife. She'll vouch for me.
Cardinal Coco Puffs. I like Coco Puffs.
Coco Puffs, yeah. Well, I mean, he's got the name. He's got the look. He looks like he's cuckoo for Coco Puffs.
Yeah, here he is on the screen. This is Cardinal Coco Palmario.
Needs a little teeth whitening happening there. But aside from that, you've got style, sir. So anyway, yeah, he was there. It came out just a month ago that he was actually at this party enjoying himself. He works hard. He plays hard. Why not? Yeah, that's a big deal. So it's there's a lot of, I mean, I think this shakes out where people are expecting at this point to do the political, the shimmy and jive, adjust the episcopacy and go back to business as usual. A bunch of new facts and figures have come out regarding this phenomenon of what's being called abuse. I'm not sure how you call any of this abuse when
or clericalism.
When you clericalize another young man in the seminary.
Yeah.
I'm not sure how that's abuse, but except that's sort of the politically neutral term. And people are asking, does homosexuality have anything to do with this? When one young man has intercourse with another and it's a widespread thing, you know, I think that's what we call a prima facie case. But they're trying to make a push, places like America Magazine, to say that gay-fueled orgies at seminaries across the land, and now the one that we know of at the Holy Office, this has nothing to do with the fact that young men are being abused, altar boys and young seminarians are being abused across the land, which is facially ridiculous. And so now we find ourselves in the situation, don't we, where we have to say, nah, if you're attracted to a guy and you start having sex with him, that makes you gay. That's a gay thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's that.
Yeah, Tim. I mean, it was just a little bit over a month ago that it was leaked out that Cardinal Coco Puffs, that's Francesco Coco Pomerio, that he was allegedly at that cocaine fueled gay party, but that the police, in order to honor his being a cardinal, let him leave early before they made arrests. Now, this is not confirmed in any police reports, but it's pretty crazy that the CDF, as you call it, the right. Holy Office, which is the old name, Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith, isn't just the place where they secure doctrine for the Catholic Church. It's also the office where they handle all sexual abuse cases of priests.
And where they party, apparently.
Yeah, apparently. Yeah. Yeah. Apparently. And a lot of people don't understand this. The Congregation of Doctrine and Faith is offices, but as you go up in the building, there are rooms. It's a dormitory. So the people who work in the office live there. Just go downstairs and there's their office. So it's both a kind of an apartment and a workplace. And so Cardinal Coco Puffs got Monsignor Luigi Capozzi a room there, and it's inside the Vatican. Like, you can literally throw a baseball and hit the door, the side door where the sacristy is in St. Peter's. I mean, it's close. He got Monsignor Luigi Capozzi a bedroom there. And Capozzi's bringing in cocaine and bringing in either other homosexuals or gay prostitutes in the walls of the Vatican, and they're doing this crazy stuff. There's another story, Tim, that maybe people haven't heard about, and this has to do, again, with Rome. And I'm so happy this is coming out. I've been in Rome the last three summers. I've been teaching seminarians. The seminarians I've been hanging out with were great, but I was also aware of weird stuff in Rome, in the seminaries, like gay stuff, man.
As you were there?
As I was there, I was aware of it, and it broke my heart. I even didn't want to go back because it's kind of like when Martin Luther went to Rome for the first time and you saw the corruption. He was like, man, this is the church. So. Yeah. In a certain sense, that this is coming out, it makes me happy. It makes me relieved. Not that it happened, but that now people know about it. It's not just a secret that some people know about.
Right.
It's coming out, you know? It's coming out.
Right.
So there was two seminarians at the Irish College in Rome, and they were sent home by their rector after being found getting it on in bed together. But here's what's interesting about it, Tim. Both men, here's the report, both men had been drinking earlier at an event marking the 50th anniversary of Pope Paul VI's 1968 encyclical Humanae Vitae, which banned artificial means of contraception.
What better way to celebrate?
Yeah. So these guys were at an event celebrating Humanae Vitae, the proper ordering of human sexuality of a man towards a woman, not just a man towards a woman, but the miracle of conception,
right?
Being open to life. Not sodomy, but being open to procreation. These guys drink there, go home, and are found in bed together at the seminary. The rector kicks them out.
Before we accuse them of hypocrisy, maybe they weren't contracepting. I'm just kidding. Yeah,
it is contraceptive, right? As we talked in another video, Dante places the sodomite in the desert, in the parched land, because no fruit, no life, nothing can be born of sodomy or even heterosexual contraception. So
I get it.
The Archbishop of Dublin said he would no longer send trainee priests from the diocese to St. Patrick's College in Maynooth because of the atmosphere of homosexuality back in Ireland. In Ireland, they were finding that their seminarians were using the Grindr app, which is basically a hookup app for homosexuals.
Really?
Yeah. So that's going on back in Ireland. So he's like, oh, I know what I'll do. I'll send them to Rome where there won't be that bad influence. Meanwhile, it's going on. And we wonder why the church in Ireland is dying.
Right.
There was an Irish woman in our comments a couple days ago, and she's like, let me just tell you, from Ireland, the church is dead here.
Have you seen Calvary, the movie?
Mm-mm.
Irish film that came out in 2014, 2015. Yeah, it gives quite the picture of the Irish church as a dead on arrival mechanism. They keep calling the main character priest a great priest. And you're like, this guy's mediocre at best. But I guess comparatively, it's with respect to the Irish church, it's a rough scene. Yeah.
Yeah.
Worse than American church. And that's saying a lot.
Yeah. So, I mean, what do you think? Is this just a Roman thing? Is it just a American thing? Is it just an Irish thing? Is it just a Argentinian thing? Or are we at the point in church history where it's a Catholic thing? It's everywhere. And then second thing I want you to answer, Tim, if you want, and that is, does this go back centuries, a millennium? Or is this something that's been introduced to the Catholic priesthood in the last 50, 60, 70 years?
Yeah, it's a pointed question because that's precisely what it is. It's become a Catholic thing. And the answer to that question is, at what stage in the devolution are we? In what stage of the planned obsolescence of the Catholic priesthood, planned by folks we've talked to death about, like Bella Dodd? We'll probably talk some more about her at some point. The Masons, the, you know, worldwide Lavender Mafia, and the of course the Marxists, spoken of by Sister Lucy at Fatima. And you can read it in documents like AA 1025. This was the plan, not only to have an infiltration by Marxists and Masons, but the best agents at corrupting the priesthood. As when we talk about corrupting the priesthood, we can talk about the doctrinal corruption that's happened, and bully for them, right? That's the goal. But also, personnel is policy, as people are wont to say in Washington, D.C. And if you can corrupt the doctrine and corrupt the men and all the little capotes of the world get to, have their fun and get their Cocoa Puffs out of town in out of the, you know, the apartment in order to not get in trouble, that's great as well. And if every, 5 years, one of these things gets busted and goes to the media, that's bully as well, right? From the infiltrator's point of view, and this infiltration is, 60, right, 70 years old, it all works perfectly,
right? Right? You get to corrupt doctrine and you get bad press for the Catholic Church. Win-win.
Right. And it's significantly rare enough that it actually gets, that they get found out, that the odds are low, significantly low, for any individual gay man you're trying to get to come into the priesthood, right? That you say, hey, barely anyone gets caught. Come in, live on our dime. We got, we got garments.
Not live on our dime, live on the lay people's dime.
Live on the lay people's dime. Yeah. It's like the taxpayer. We're exactly. Basically the taxpayer. It's the model provided by the Marxists in secular politics. Look what they've done to the equivalent of Super Tuesday or whatever it is this week. Look what the Marxists have done to major landscape in American politics. So it's a play right out of that playbook. And, live on the dime of, live off the sweat of the back of the worker,
Yeah, the Catholic dad who puts a little extra in the plate.
Right.
Because it's Mission Sunday or whatever. But in reality, right, just pays the mortgage on the beach house where they go once a month.
Where they get clerical with one another. Yeah. And right. And they, like I said, they got garments, it's frilly. Gay man love that. It's a great lifestyle, and you won't get caught all that often. You might never get caught, but it's
not just not getting caught. It's that there is a presumption amongst the lay people that Father would never do that.
Right. Right.
You see an odd man stroll out of the rectory at 11 PM at night, and the lay person, up until the last couple of years or even a few months, would say, oh, he must have just been doing some spiritual direction with that, poor man.
Right. Right.
Or someone That's just true. Needed money to pay their bill, and they stopped by and pastor gave him, $20 and just helped him out.
Right.
And no one would presume that there was a cocaine fueled gay orgy going on in the rectory. But now we hear these stories, like the priest that was in Chicago, he died, and they found, the deacons found him hooked up to a sex machine.
And I didn't even know that was a thing. Yeah, I'm like, yeah, a sex machine. Whoa. You know, like a sex thing. Robot?
Yeah, I don't know. And then when they go to clean out the rectory, they find a closet full of gay pornography. This guy was a pastor of a major parish in Chicago. What the heck?
Right, right.
And we're hearing more and more of this. We just had an auxiliary bishop in New York City, according to Dolan, credibly accused.
I don't want to lie, though. I want to be up here, even though, you know, your audience is large. Our audience is large. I'll be honest. The last at least 5 years, when I go to Mass, we parish shop a little bit because we don't have a consistent close Latin Mass. So if we wind up at the Novus Ordo, like you and I were talking about, I kind of say, that guy looks like he might like the garments a little too much. This guy looks like he'd be a fabulous shopper. This guy, I mean, I do it. At this point,
isn't it sad that we do that? I mean, that's disordered. We should not be suspecting the person, the men in persona Christi, of a sin that cries out to heaven. Like, isn't it sad?
Not.
And you know what? Like, there might be priests listening to this right now, Tim, and they're like, I can't believe they think that. Fathers, priests out there, guess what? Almost all Catholic laymen that I know have this conversation regularly.
Of course. Yeah, let's
and
talk
I've told
about
that to priests, you know, like priests that are my friend. They're like, really? I'm like, yeah, all the time. Catholic layman, I'm like, yeah, I don't know about Father so-and-so. You know, I wouldn't let my sons be his altar boy. That kind of conversation in the last, I think maybe 5 years ago, I never heard that. In the last year, it's like all the time.
Well,
Catholic laymen have, unfortunately, have their antennas up big time.
Right.
And are very suspicious now. And I think, rightly so, we have to be guardians. You know, it's like if little kids are getting killed by lions, you're always looking out for a lion.
Right.
And that's where we are now. Unfortunately, it's sad. It's not good. It's disordered, but it is what it is.
Yeah, it's more the condition. I mean, let's address that point head on, shall we? The conditions for the possibility of mistrust are now lame. Meaning, I mean, I admit that, but it's a guiltless admission. I mean, I'm just saying, yeah, again, we don't know what the actual numbers are. Even the recently reported numbers by LifeSite News are that, like, the population of gays in the priesthood are it is 8 times higher than the normal, you know, population, the distribution at large. It was only 2 times higher, only 2 times higher in the 50s. That's a little odd, but And the fact of the matter is, anytime the population of lions, to use your example, child eating lions, is 8 times higher, that's astronomically higher. And I want to asterisk that and come back to it in a second, because I don't think it's only 8. But 8 times higher in a certain part of the jungle, you're just like, we're in that red zone part of the jungle.
If we go through that part of the jungle, it's like, kids, stay close.
Right. So I make no apologies for that. Even as we're making the jokes about Cardinal Coco's Cocoa Puffs, you know, that goes with the scene. Now, if priests, my priest friends say, I accept that, you know, even when I was in Rome in 2007 and 2008, I was speaking with Father Bob Gall there at Santa Croce, and he was saying,
good man.
I very good man. I wear the collar, but you know, one gets spit on at least once every few months for wearing the collar, which Michael O'Brien had mentioned in one of his novels in 1997.
Yep. Yeah.
So that was happening because of the well-known high molestation numbers. Even then, my priest friends actually accept this fact as an undeniable aspect of the abuse crisis that we're in and the wider faith crisis that the church is in. Right. And I would too. I mean, temperament accounts for a lot. Right. But I don't tend to be the kind of guy that's like, you know, got spaghetti on my face and gets offended if someone asks me to wipe it off. I mean, this is the or egg on my face, as it were, after the summer of shame.
Yeah.
And many summers of shame. I mean, remember 2002? We're not old, you and I, but we're old enough to remember how it was, you know, around the time I got married in 2005. I wasn't
Catholic when that happened.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
Even I knew about it and was like, man, Catholic Church messed up.
Right. You probably thought it was, boy, I'm never going there.
Yeah.
You know, pederasty place. Yeah. So the point is, my priest friends, the ones that I'm, you know, the two that I'm thinking of that I'm most close with are like, this is part of the deal now. This is part of the landscape. So I just think some of the people out there, many of the people out there, the lay are still squeamish. And I think they need to hear it, like, boldly proclaim, like, no, I'm going to make, I mean, we make the jokes because we, what else do you do when something so horrible has come home to roost? And they're not even the kinds of jokes where it's like, ha, I got in a laugh, I'm sorry later. Like, this is not on me. The conditions for the possibility of these jokes are all set by this horrible, horrible, horrible thing. I don't know what else to do besides poke at it. Yeah. You know,
I think we should go back and talk about Bella Dodd as a possible explanation for why the number of homosexuals in the priesthood is so high, not just in America, but in the world. And if this was a conspiracy, before I do though, there's a lot of people watching and they're like, okay, well, what are the numbers, Timothy and Taylor? Like, what are we talking about here? So for the past 5 years or so, you know, just having a scotch with a priest or having dinner with a priest in Rome, whatever, occasionally these things would come up. This is not, you know, a scab that I'm trying to scratch, but they would occasionally say, oh, you know, that priest has the affliction. I'm like, what? Well, you know, he has the affliction, right? That's like code talk.
Yeah.
And so occasionally it's like, well, what, you know, is this a big deal? You know, like as I became Catholic and, you know, got to know priests all over the world, especially in Rome. And I was like, well, what are we talking about here? And good priests, and these are all, and also men who are good Catholic laymen who went to seminary, when these come up, they would say in America, most of these priests that I know are Americans,
right,
that 50% of the ordained priests in America are homosexual. And then in the episcopate, it's likely higher. And I'm like, when you say homosexual, do you mean like living the lifestyle? And the, this is just kind of a consensus, me kind of like boiling everything down. 50% are homosexual. Half of those are active in the lifestyle.
Hmm. Okay. That's interesting.
So according to these numbers, this would be a quarter of the clergy in America are active. And then another quarter are active but trying to live chastely.
Oh, active but trying to live chastely or just?
No.
Just...
So half are homosexual in inclination. Of that 50%, 25, so half of them, 25, are just like Father Luigi, you know, living it up. Maybe once a month, you know, they just go nuts. You know, that's their lifestyle. And then they kind of come back and they have, maybe they go to confession, maybe they don't. Maybe they don't care, you know, they don't think it's wrong at all. And then of that 50%, the other half are not living that way. They're trying to live chastely, but they are homosexual men who may have a crush on another priest or, you know, exhibit behavior that is homosexual, but they're not hiring prostitutes, going to parties, et cetera. Now, I've also heard in the seminary that it's just as high in the seminary of men that both go on to become priests and those that leave. In fact, a lot of the ones that leave are heterosexual and they're getting harassed in the seminary. And it's also known that there are professors and administrators in the seminary who are homosexual and prey on these men. And we've seen that in all kinds of dioceses, especially right now, the one with it's Honduras, where around, I think it was 40 plus seminarians wrote Rome asking for an intervention that they're being harassed by the homosexual seminarians in the seminary.
Right.
They have to make, they want an intervention.
Please get me out of here.
Yeah, so if we're talking 50% of priests, that's a lot. That's a lot of priests. And when they say the episcopate is even more lavender, and why do you think that is, Tim? Why is it the higher you go, would it become more lavender? And it just seems to me those are the those are the men who get promoted because they're the company men. They're obviously, if you live in that environment and you don't blow the whistle and you don't talk about it and you cover, or even you are compromised, you're the perfect guy to bring up into upper management, which is what the episcopate has become.
Upper management. It's an intelligent design issue. You don't wind up with numbers upwards of, let's do a little math here. We're rounding up to say 2% of the broad population at large, right, in America. I think it's in America, it's worldwide, is gay. 16% is the hyper-conservative figure,
right,
being pushed, put out there this past month by even LifeSite News. They probably know this is a hyper-conservative number. So that's eight times more.
That'd be 16%.
Yeah, 16% is higher, you know, that eight times frequency of occurrence. So if the 50% is right, which sounds much more,
and I just want to qualify, the 50% is, so you have 25% who are not active, 25% who are.
So let's call them SSA. Yeah, the 25% are same sex attracted, but they might not be gay men, right? You know,
they're not living the gay lifestyle, right? And then you have, these terms get muddy, but hopefully people are following it. And then you have the other 25% are in the lifestyle. Either with other priests, like the guys down in, was it Miami, that were that were caught in a car in public car. Near a park with kids nearby. So that's the other 25%.
Yeah. I mean, I think the terms are important. Linguistic manipulation, we need to start taking it back. The left does it so well. And they hate it when we come up with these neologisms, terms, which help to distinguish and parse. They hate the distinction between same-sex attracted and gay. I'm thinking of this as I was last night reading that America magazine article saying gay has nothing to do with a bunch of altar boys being molested by a bunch of men. Go figure. Because
adolescent same-sex, teenage boys.
Yeah, yeah. And 17-year-olds who have been, they're like, I got molested on it for 5 years. Really? You know, you didn't just say, hey, I'm not going back there. I mean, these are in many cases young gay altar boys who are, unable to form consent perfectly.
Or so likely they might corrupted. Be less likely corrupted.
And corrupted is the term.
Yeah.
But 17, if you take a young 17-year-old Master Timothy Gordon, you're going to have a fight on your hands, number one. And number two, I'm not going back for 5 years, going back for more. So politically incorrect to say I'm willing to go there. There's some sort of issue with the corruption of the will at that point. But my point is this, if a same-sex attracted man never once acts on his attraction, then he is not a gay man. Same thing. I've been angry enough to kill lots of times. You know, I know how to throw these things. And if I'm angry enough to fight, say, in a given situation, and I don't get into a fight, then I can't be charged of being, you know, this guy was street fighting, right? It's the exact same thing. Your sexual attraction is not reductive of your soul. It is not reductive of your entire identity. So places like America Magazine, probably the Jesuit order writ large, leftist, insane Catholics within the church in general, they want to not use this term for that. Let's take your figure, 25%, half of the 50% that are not active, according to your friend's anecdote. I'd say call them SSA. It's effective to parse it that way. But whatever the case, I was going to make a broader point, but that probably needs to set in. I think it's an important.
Right.
So more do we use SSA?
If those numbers are correct, that's one out of every four priests you bump into.
One out of every four is harboring a desire, and the other one out of four is acting on it.
Yeah. Now, there was a priest, he's Polish. His name is Father Darius Oko. And he states, he's done his research on it, and he says that in the United States of America, the American bishops is up to 50% homosexual. So this is a Polish priest who studied the abuse crisis worldwide, but particularly in America. And he said that Cardinal McCarrick was only the tip of the iceberg in America. the tip of the iceberg. The reason we know about him is because he's the Cardinal of DC. He's the most prominent of everybody. But you go out into some rural dioceses, different places, he says up to 50% of the episcopate is homosexual in inclination, which perfectly maps on to what I've been told by numerous seminarians, priests, monsignors worldwide.
Me too. Me too.
So I think that this number is, you know, Father Oko says, according to reliable estimates, it's estimated that 30 to 40% of priests have homosexual inclinations and 40 to 50% of bishops in the USA have homosexual inclinations.
Still sounds conservative to me. Cardinal McCarrick is
Tim,
just
some people
the tip
watching
of
right
the
now.
Iceberg.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Some people, their mind just blew up.
Really? At this point?
The first time a priest told me 50%, I almost just fell out of my chair. I was like, what? I figured it was like 10%. You know, there's definitely some effeminate men in the priesthood and I'd run into them. But when he said 50%, like the first time I heard that, it blew my mind.
Yeah. But when was that? I mean,
like 5 years ago, 4 or 5
people,
years ago.
We used to say there's a little term in the popular culture. It's being slow on the uptake. It's like a Ben Stiller movie. Come on, stay with us now. Yeah. Like 4 or 5 years ago, that's fine. But come on, were you awake this summer? Rip Van Winkle out there. Were you guys sleeping all summer? Like it's a big thing. And if you don't, and again, we also used to have this other term, gaydar, right?
Yeah.
Like if your priest knows more about interior design, it's like a Jeff Foxworthy routine. Then
right.
He might be a gay man. Then your wife, then he right. might be a gay man. If he you know, dresses more ostentatiously than your wife, he might be a gay man. And this was something I promised to revisit, and I didn't. So why would the bishops be higher as a portion of the population in terms of homosexuality than priests writ large? That looks like intelligent design. Well, why are the priests higher than a portion of the population of homosexuals than the rest of the distribution of the America? That's intelligent design. So they're being promoted because it's important to have lots of gays in the priesthood to corrupt the church, as Bella Dodd and the infiltrators wanted to do it. And it's even more important in positions of authority. If you're going to, I mean, look at it this way, you know, give a man a fish, he eats for a day, teach a man to fish, he'll eat for the rest of his life. If the infiltrators, the communist infiltrators, do this as a one-time deal and they infiltrate the bottom ranks of the pyramid, all the parish priests out there, boom, good. You'll give a good generation, maybe two, of corruption. And that's bully. Good capital. But if they can infiltrate the bottom ranks and especially the top of the pyramid, then this will propagate itself and get some bishops in, maybe someone into the congregation for bishops, you know, and you know, you'll have it for generations to come. You'll run the church, which is what they do. The Lavender Mafia runs the church. They might have been the ones to force out Pope Benedict the 16th that we talked about. So I mean, I understand that people go cross-eyed when they hear 50% of priests, which even that might be conservative. Who knows, really? But at this point, come on, let's have just a feast day or something, like a day of reckoning, where a solemnity, I guess it would be, where we all acknowledge, okay, we've got a problem with the gay in the priesthood. And no one, okay, after this day, it's the point after which no one's allowed to be like, what? My priest might be gay? I mean, you just can't say that anymore. Come on, you got to. Well, let's make that day soon.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying.
You want to talk about Bella Dodd?
Sure.
Okay, so here's the background on Bella Dodd. She's born in 1904. She dies in 1969. So the year that the new liturgy, Novus Ordo Liturgy, comes out. She was an active member in the she's Italian. She was an active member in the Communist Party of America and the New York Teachers Union. So communists are working in the teachers union, surprise, in the 30s and in the 40s. She was kicked out of the Communist Party in 1949, and she ends up having a conversion to the Catholic faith. I assume that she was Italian, that she was baptized as a child. But she repents, and she ends up telling Archbishop Fulton Sheen that she helped infiltrate, on behalf of the Communist Party, the Catholic priesthood in America. Over 1,000 priests who were communist sympathizers and homosexual. I've heard 1,000. I've also heard 1,100.
Yeah, it's 1,100.
It's 1,100. Okay, so basically she's just one. There are other operatives worldwide. She's just one who the Lord reached out with his grace, touched her heart, and converted her.
Right. People forget that.
Yeah, she's not a sole operative. She's just the one we know about.
Right.
So she receives instruction from Fulton Sheen, which is amazing. And she's an anti-communist. And she says, hey, look, you know, my job was to recruit these sexually compromised men and get them in the seminary.
Right.
So that's over 1,000, 1,100. This is back in the 1940s. So everybody who's out there saying, and Tim and I talk all the time about problems post-Vatican II. Everyone was saying, oh, it's Vatican II. No, guys, look, the problems go before that. We didn't get 1962 to 1965 and everything happened in 1969, just ex nihilo.
Right.
The poison had been fermenting already for decades.
For a generation. Yes. It took a generation in the late 30s, early 40s. Problems didn't show up until perfect timing, middle 60s. But
Leo the 13th and Pius the 10th are battling modernism decades.
That's true.
Before the 60s. And so this is part of that corruption. And by the way, Bella Dodd, this isn't just like whisperings to Fulton Sheen. She testifies before a televised hearing of the U.S. Senate Internal Security Subcommittee.
Right.
About infiltration in the United States of America.
The first time I'd ever heard her name was in AP U.S. history class at Dallas Jesuit there. I remember that name stuck out to me before I cared about any of this. I was sort of Catholic, being raised in the faithless Catholic school system. And I didn't really care about it that much, but I remember my teacher saying, so this was a Catholic lady. She testified before the Senatorial Commission on Un-American Activities, and she said that it's grabby. So I remember her name, and then I put it, you know, I filed it away in my brain for 20 years until I, or, you know, 15 years until I reconnected with this story, 5 years ago or so, and cared about it once again. But yeah, it's a heck of a thing. It's demonstrated. Also, Dietrich and Alice von Hildebrand were also friends with Bella Dodd. And it's funny, Alice von Hildebrand did a round of interviews with even people like Glenn Beck in that, like 2 years ago. You wonder what that guy thinks. He's got the right ideas on some categories of thought. Obviously, he's a practicing Mormon, so it doesn't influence him as deeply as it does us. But he's interested in stuff like this, and he understands, I think, intuitively, he's a fallen away Catholic, how important this is. If you want to infiltrate a big organization, you go Catholic Church. He did an interview with her. Michael Voris did an interview with her. She did a whole round of them. And she was saying that it was a conversation between her husband and young or middle-aged Miss Bella Dodd and Dietrich von Hildebrand, who's an admirable character in the history of the church, published many great, moderate, even-toned books critical of Vatican II, said, he said to himself when they had her over for dinner, in like the den after dinner, like, oh man, sometimes I'm becoming more and more convinced that we've been infiltrated. And Bella Dodd looked at him and she said, you think? And then he said, well, yeah. And then she said, well, I know. That's when she shared with him what wasn't so widely known yet. I put 1,100 men into the priesthood. They're all communist moles. Four of them are now cardinals. And for whatever reason, she wouldn't tell him. Probably I don't know what would have happened to her if she would have told him. But four are now high-ranking cardinals, not just cardinals. So, yeah. So the Von Hildebrands knew this. Everyone needs to know it. This is what we mean by intelligent design.
Yeah.
There's no better. I mean, it's a perfect play.
Yeah.
One thing that
you got to get to the factories where they make the priests. And what are the factories? The seminarians assemble all the material, right? And then it's the bishop who lays hands, right? It actually gives the ontological, metaphysical character of holy orders. So if you're the devil and you observe this, you have to say, okay, well, first of all, we got to get in the seminarians and get all that corrupted. And then we also need to make sure that if the bishops are all full and sheen and they're strolling out a line of effeminate homosexual men to be ordained, full and sheen men, no, I don't think so. Right. So you got to get the bishop as well. So you get the seminaries infiltrated Lavender Mafia style. You get the bishops and the cardinals. Then you also got to go to Rome and you got to get the congregation for bishops. You got to infiltrate that. If you get those, you know, it's like if you're looking at the map in a war, if you can get those three areas infiltrated.
Right.
It's not a checkmate. It's a check.
Right.
It's a check. And one more thing for everybody watching. The goal of Belladad was not to create a homo heresy. The goal of Belladad and the communists was not to just have gayness. That was not their final cause. That was not their goal. Their goal was to create global communism. Their goal was to spread the errors of Russia throughout the world. We just did three videos on Fatima. Belladad was the anti-Fatima. She was with the Russians. She wanted the errors of Russia spread throughout the world. The number one enemy of that is the Catholic Church. Therefore, you infiltrate the Catholic Church with homosexual communist men. So it's important to see that the homosexual problem is really oriented to atheistic Marxism.
Right.
That's end goal of Satan, the demons, and these evil communists.
Right. Because
it's true now, too. The reason we're having trans and gender issues and homosexual everything right now is not just for the end of crazy sexuality. It is the destruction of human society through Marxism, communism. That's the end goal. Atheism. That's the goal, is to destroy the family, to destroy the state, to destroy religion, to destroy everything is the end game. Homosexuality is just one rung on the ladder, one step.
Right. There's the two-pronged attack. You always have to have the logical running alongside the ontological. So the ontological attack happens through this anti-life initiative. It's what we talked about, personnel, corrupt personnel. No one's better for the job than homosexuals who are behind the scene. The ultimate form of corruption, right, is sexual corruption that will, to put it in your terms from a few shows back, spiritual incest, right? The, you know, fathers, spiritual fathers, whether it's a bishop with a seminarian or a priest with a parishioner, you are literally preying upon in the most heinous way. It's even more loathsome and even worse sin than a priest doing the Thornbird style with like a, you know, a widow, a young woman who's a widow. It's homosexuality. We can't back off of our guns. We got to stick to our guns there. That's way, way, way worse. That's a mortal sin, too, for a priest to break his vows with a woman, Thornbird style. But this is way, way worse. We don't want to back off there. So that's the ontological attack that happens at the level of personnel. At the same time, they make the logical attack on the doctrine, and they don't do the doctrinal attack, as we've seen over the last 5 years. They don't do the doctrinal attack by saying, like Arius and the Arianists, Arius was honest, right? There wasn't a diabolical. I got into this debate the other day on the level of, you know, what's going on with the logical attack. Is this current crisis in the church worse than Arianism? I maintained it is. Here's why. Arius was making a grave yet honest error, right? In the early church, to hold that Jesus was not fully divine, he was only divine-like, it had all of these historical accidents that ameliorated the actual guilt of a heretic like Arius, who said Jesus was not fully divine. You know, you had, you know, hordes infiltrating Rome, and these hordes were polytheistic, right? So they took the difficult concept, the most difficult concept of the Trinity, and they said, oh, we know what this looks like. You know, God and Jesus, that's kind of like Zeus and any of the demigods. Jesus is more like a demigod. It might have been grave error, and he might have been unrepentant, which is another matter. But I do think it was honest. Whereas that's not what's happening now, where the leftists are trying to get homosexuality and adultery christened. They're doing it sneakily. It's being done on the sly. It's being done by the rule of, a thousand cuts and all that. So it's got all of the indicia of intent, intelligent design, and slow growing phantom menace.
Yeah. And, you know, Arius would appear to council and he would state what he says. You know, there's the old story of St. Nicholas. Arius stands up and makes his case for a quasi-divine Jesus Christ. And there's the old story of Nicholas standing up and punching him in the face. Like, it was clear what Arius was trying to set before the council, and it was rejected, thank God.
Right.
These heretics are closeted. They are in the shadows. And modernism, as we've seen in some previous videos that we've done, it uses some of the same words as orthodoxy, but it fills those words with different meanings.
Yes.
And it's also just a conspiracy of silence. Lay people watching this, when was the last time you heard a sermon on Humanae Vitae and contraception? Most of you, never. Why? Because in the priesthood, the idea that sterile orgasms or sterile ejaculation is a mortal intrinsic sin is not accepted amongst the priesthood because they're engaging in it. That's like a huge epiphany for me that I had a few years ago. Oh, right. If this is the lifestyle of so many priests, if they're saying men can have orgasms with one another and that's okay, well, then they can't stand in the pulpit and say that a married man and a married wife can't have the nuptial brace in that disordered way because they're living contrary to it.
Right.
All of a sudden, all these things start making sense. You know, you feel like you're not taking crazy pills anymore. You're like, oh.
Yeah.
Oh, gross.
Right.
That's where we're at.
Yeah. Conspiracies of silence are difficult indicia to read if one doesn't have a good instinct about it. But your question, your question just now, take a moment, pause the video or whatever, and ask yourself this: when is the last time I've heard a sermon on, not even abortion? You'll hear the abortion thing because it's not the main issue. They're not out there having abortions. They're a bunch of gay men, you know, doing what they want, living the lifestyle they want. And this is not, it might be a hot button issue with the secular culture, but in the church, it's contraception. Mm-hmm. And you know, you might even have heard a homily asking for more acceptance of quote unquote LGBT. These are the two, either something that's missing or something that shouldn't be there. But yeah, if you know how to read the sign of the times, right, like the Bible says, you have to say there's got to be a reason for this. Because in 1968, when Humanae Vitae came out, it was so hotly contested, demurred from that. The natural thing to do is to take it into homiletics around that. This is how what the church has done for 2,000 years. Yep. If something's a hot button issue, you take it back to your flock and you discuss it. The stunning absence of that, with contrary evidence, these priests are standing at the front of the congregation. They see families with one kid, two kids. Family, you know, couple here that's maybe 50 with no kids, one kid, two kids, no kids, one kid's that people, these are contracepting families, contraceptive families.
And of course, someone can say, well, no, some people have infertility. That's true. Okay, fine. But when it's
100% of the congregation,
100%, but in the 90%, right?
I mean, at Novus Ordo parishes, also, yeah, 95%. At my Novus Ordo parish, having five kids which is not that big. You know, I would, you know, we hope to get triple that by the end, but you know, you're doing your part with eight, but five kids, we get bull rushed at the end. Like, oh, show. Your family sees, we're a freak show. It's like, yeah. No one else is anywhere near that. The biggest secular kind of model is three kids. One, yeah. Two, maybe three. We're the only ones, and we get it's irritating. We're like, oh, we're, you know, Rudy had a big family, but this is nothing. You know, I'm sick of that conversation at Catholic Church. I know I have it at Denny's afterwards in the secular population, right? Yeah. But I shouldn't be having this at a Catholic church. It's a thing.
Yeah. Here's another truth bomb for people that are just waking up to all this. Get woke, folks. I have had so many conversations. I mean, you know, at the new St. Thomas Institute, there's thousands of students. So I'm constantly taking questions and interacting and with other people speaking events. So I have a lot of these conversations with priests and lay people. And I have heard so many stories from sweet Catholic mothers who say, I was in confession last week or last year, and I was crying because it's so hard being a mom, or I have five kids or seven kids or whatever it is. And I was just kind of opening my heart to Father. And Father said to me, well, just get on the pill. If you follow your conscience, it's okay.
Yep.
And they're horrified. They're actually hearing it in confession.
Yeah.
The priest won't say it in the pulpit. But when he's got the crying mother who's like, it's so hard. Instead of what the mother really needs to hear, is God bless you. Bless you. On behalf of the Catholic Church, thanks for being a mom. I know it's really hard. It's a really hard time to be a parent, to be a mother. Thank you for living your vocation. It's awesome. I'm going to pray a rosary for you tonight. That's what she needs to hear. She doesn't need go to your doctor and get on the pill.
Right.
Right. But again, these are these same corrupt priests who are telling these beautiful, wonderful mothers these lies. And it's not just like it happened to me once. I've heard it so many times.
Me too.
So it's everywhere.
Yes. Yeah. Even, I mean, I want to make a confession, you know, in front of several thousand people, but back in the day when I was first married, if I had to confess something, that was less than noble in nature, contraceptive in nature, I would get the most ridiculous excuse making on my behalf on the part of the priest, like, oh, well, you were, you know, I taught at a public school the very first year I was married. That was 13 years ago. Oh, you're doing so much service for society. That's, you know, you might not have any kids yet, and that's okay. The public school children that you teach are like your children. Just ridiculous, ridiculous trippings over oneself to make grave, mortal, unacceptable sin that is loathsome before God, as all mortal sin is, make it okay. And I'm like, yeah, but even then when I wasn't 100% on board, wasn't living 100% in the faith, it's like, this is wrong. It helped push me toward the light. This is wrong. Contraception is gravely wrong. And it's so widespread and yet so little talked about. That's the kind of conspiracy of silence that ought to get you woke right away.
Yes.
Because it's absolutely ubiquitous.
Yep. I know two other people. One was in RCIA, one was in Cana classes. And in RCIA, there's an engaged couple. One was converting, you know, to become Catholic for the marriage. And they talked about in RCIA being open and honest about which form of contraception you should use. At a Catholic church in RCIA. Same thing at a Cana retreat. A couple I know.
Wow.
Contraception was discussed at the Cana retreat. All right, so this is everywhere. I mean, it's not just a homosexual thing. That whole idea of a disordered sexuality is being allowed and promoted in the confessional, in RCIA, in Cana, throughout America. I'm going to go ahead and say throughout the world.
Yeah, throughout the first world, at least. We know it's Europe and America. And, you know, what do the bishops in Africa report? Which is beautiful in a way. They say, do not, United Nations, do not push on us your filthy first world contraception and abortion. This is a form of imperialism. I love it when Cardinal Sarah says this is cultural imperialism. you feel bad about, you know, Western Caucasian world. You feel bad about slavery or whatever. Here's the new slavery you're trying to push on Africa and on Asia. You're tying your the UN ties its money, hog ties it to conditions like contraception. We don't want your problems. We've seen them. We've got problems of our own.
Yeah.
In some senses, they're more exigent, but they're not spiritually as crippling as contraception, which is the wood rot. It rots out everything. And it's no coincidence that it's the homosexual renegades in the priesthood, not open renegades, moles, that are pushing it for precisely the reason you said, Dr. Marshall.
Yep.
So it's important. It's important that people recognize this. And I don't think, like I said, my goal is just to get us all to a point where we can talk honestly, talk out in the open daylight. Like, I don't want to keep having this response after the summer of shame with people at my parish, at a visiting parish or whatever, like, where they're like, really, you think lots of priests are gay? It's like, you got to get on this. We can't, because that's just step one, acknowledging the problem. That's his first step. Now we got to get to problem solving. If individual, decently smart Catholics, a dentist, a lawyer, were like, really, this is the problem? It's like, come on, man, you're white collar, you have the internet at home, you have the wherewithal to figure this out.
Right.
Yes, we have to do something about it. The question is, what can be done about it? And that's a trickier question.
You know, I want to bring in our good friend, Archbishop Vigano. We did a whole video on the third letter of Vigano, the third epistle of Vigano. And he has this one paragraph in which he drops a nuclear bomb on the church. We kind of covered it before, but I think in the context of homosexuality and the priesthood, this paragraph needs to be lifted up right now. And I'm going to read the whole thing and I'll pause. Tim, you can jump in. So Archbishop Vigano, this is his third testimony. He says, quote, "As to the second silence, this grave crisis cannot be properly addressed and resolved," which is what you were saying, Tim. We got to resolve it. We got to recognize it. We got to resolve it. "Properly addressed and resolved unless and until we call things by their true names. This is a crisis due to the scourge of homosexuality and its agents, in its motives, in its resistance to reform. It is no exaggeration to say that homosexuality has become a plague in the clergy, and it can only be eradicated with spiritual weapons." So he says, scourge and a plague in the clergy. Right. Vigano, former nuncio of the Vatican to America, a high officer in the Vatican, in the Secretary of State previously. This guy knows what's going on. He's calling out Ouellette in the Congregation for Bishops. He's calling out the Pope. He's calling out McCarrick, calling out World, calling out everybody. And he's saying, look, the crisis can't be understood unless you recognize this is a scourge.
Right.
It's a scourge of homosexuality in the clergy.
And he knows more than that. I mean, it's like, if you're there, if you address a bunch of guilty or quasi guilty parties over the last several decades, right? You're not even just saying, hey, look, you ought to be able to read the sign of the times, like me and you are saying to people we go to mass with, or maybe your audience, like, come on, wake up. No one's guilty there. Not us, not the people we're addressing. But Vigano, not to say he's guilty of homosexuality, he's not, but he knows he's through the sin of omission of letting this go too long. He said in his first letter, I have much to atone for. I let this go on. And by doing this big risky thing, I hope to make, you know, a beginning at atonement. And he's addressing fellow bishops, brother bishops, and specifically Cardinal Ouellette. He's saying, like me, you know where the bodies are buried. I think Ouellette has maybe more skin in the game than Vigano, but he's addressing them saying, hey, we need to come together. We're the only ones that can solve this together with, you know, the Holy Spirit through prayer and penance. But it's not the same thing as when you and I address this with other people that don't didn't formally really know that this was a thing at all. You know, we all have our red pill moments, but these guys have been steeped in it for decades. So you got to let that set in.
Yeah.
There's an information disparity in the Catholic Church. There's an information disparity in any hierarchical organization, and they have access to all the info.
Yep.
And we have next to none. And so part of the blessed courage of Archbishop Vigano is the fact that he's willing to speak out and say, like, look, yeah, I have a little bit of this guilt staining my soul as well. And he's still willing to do it. It's a real, and he's doing it in the most stark terms. In this third letter, as you pointed out, I was cheering when he was saying, trust me, you know, America Magazine's publishing articles saying a bunch of priests having sex with each other and having sex with young seminarians, that has nothing facially to do with homosexuality. What? Yeah. You know, even DSM-5 says it has something to do with homosexuality. Even they admit it. How could it not?
Yeah.
When, you know, when a guy has sex with his wife, that has something to do with heterosexuality.
Yeah.
So a vegan is like, this is preposterous. This is the plague. This is the scourge. We have to eradicate it.
Yeah. And he says, until we call things by their true names.
Right.
He calls it for us. He goes on to say, it is an enormous hypocrisy to condemn the abuse, claim to weep for the victims, and yet refuse to denounce the root cause of so much sexual abuse, homosexuality. It is hypocrisy to refuse to acknowledge that this scourge, third time he uses it, this scourge is due to a serious crisis in the spiritual life of the clergy and to fail to take steps necessary to remedy it. What are those steps to remedy it?
Getting the homosexuals out of the priesthood. Yeah.
If that is something you've done, boom, you're gone. I think, and it's in the old canon law. It's in the old canon law, and I looked it up in the new 1983 code, and it's muddy and weak. But and we should probably do a show comparing the old Pio Benedictine code with the new 1983 code on these questions of sexuality in the clergy, because it's so muddy and soft in the new one. In the old one, if you had illicit sexual relations, boom, you're going laicized. You are done, buddy. There's none of this, oh, you made a mistake, there's room for mercy. No, you're in persona Christi. You are called to a higher standard than the laity. You are called to sanctify the faithful through your prayers and through your life and through your preaching. You're done. There are no second chances because you are held up as the capital F father of the faithful. If you're gonna go around and have people call you father, you better be a chaste man.
It's beautiful. Yeah. I mean, when I was reading this in preparation for today's show, I wanted to read the opposition point of view, this cover piece on America Magazine. Maybe we could show that cover.
Go for it, because I don't read that magazine.
Yeah. No. Neither do I. It's like reading The Gray Lady or the Washington Compost, right? It's an opposition piece.
Right.
They're giving it their best shot. And it's also rather entertaining to watch these people squirm, giving it their best shot at, you know, de-immanentizing the eschaton. What I mean is taking a bunch of homosexuals doing homosexual stuff and saying this has nothing to do with homosexuality. It's just kind of good fun to watch people squirm.
Well, they have to say that because their agenda is to normalize.
Yes.
The LGBT entire agenda. That's the Jesuit America Magazine project. So now if you start associating gayness with rape and molestation, all that ruins their agenda.
Oh, yeah.
They've got to cut that off. They've got to get the knife out and they've got to separate the two. That's why you see James Martin. He's so vocal about this. His entire project's being smoked. So he's got to separate the two. And that's what America's doing, America Magazine.
Right. So I think it's funny timing. They're saying that the co-occurrence, you know, it's a correlation, not causation, that's ever been demonstrated between having a bunch of gays and a bunch of gay actions. And it's like, okay, that technically speaking, I mean, David Hume can take the idea of causation and say, you never prove it. It's one of the logical axioms. So yes,
right.
We impute causation where correlation is strong enough, right? And even DSM-5, the gold standard of secular psychology, acknowledges that the difference between pederasty and pedophilia, if a man has sex with a young kid, a prepubescent kid is the specific standard, then DSM-5 says, well, this is not considered a heterosexual act if it's a girl, and a homosexual act if it's a young boy. It's just an act of pedophilia. But with post-pubescence, even if it's a minor, you know, we have this legal standard at law. But remember, yeah, I mean, the Virgin Mary is what, 15, 16. This changes with legality, legal norms. You know, if it's a post-pubescent kid, this isn't really pedophilia. This is pederasty at most. And since the body of the victim is now mature as a young woman or a young man, even DSM-5, I expect this to change sometime in the next decade, because DSM's a creature of the political correct, the left. Even DSM-5 acknowledges that, no, heterosexuality can be imputed from the gender, the sex of the victim. Homosexuality can be imputed from the sex of the victim. And most of these quote unquote victims were young men, right? Meaning post-pubescent young men, many of them seminary, many of them even of consenting age. I'm not sure really where the legal abuse, where right. Seculars don't care about the kind of spiritual fatherhood being betrayed by an act of a seminary, who runs a seminary and a seminarian. Yeah, so why call it abuse?
Yeah, if it's Cardinal McCarrick, a cardinal with a 23-year-old seminarian, they're like, yeah, it's consenting adult, it's legit. We right. see the spiritual abuse, and we also see the coercion that's used on a spiritual level to corrupt a young man, even if he is without, consenting.
Without a doubt.
Yeah.
But I mean, I want people to see the betrayal by the left, and this goes back to the Me Too thing, the Me Too movement, the betrayal by the left of the sexual revolution, right? Which is also largely heterosexual in nature, the Me Too movement, and it's a secular thing. Look, if you want everyone everywhere, I guess, of consenting age for now, until NAMBLA gets a more powerful lobby, then they'll change that as well. Everyone of consenting age to have as much sex with as many different partners as possible. Remember the thing we did on communism, you should have as many partners as possible. Then where is the quote unquote abuse? Without contradiction or violation of your policies of the sexual revolution, where is the abuse? Okay, so your boss wants to have sex with you. He can't force himself on you, right? He can make you, he can put a better to his money. If you want to advance your career, have one more sexual partner, which is a good thing according to the sexual revolution, right? To have as many sexual partners as possible. So I don't, the frustrating facet of this for me is I don't hear many secular conservatives or Catholic conservatives out there forcing this issue. I mean, we really, over the last year, as this thing has played out, we sort of have them right where we want them. And I like to exploit, an advantage in the argument where possible. We can say you either believe in your evil, wicked sexual principles of the sexual revolution or you don't. Yeah. I say they don't, because now why are we calling this Catholic abuse? We shouldn't, we shouldn't even use the term. It's the homo heresy writ large. I don't even like myself. I get irritated at myself when I say the Catholic sexual abuse crisis. That's not, it's not abuse.
Yeah.
Right?
I've noticed in the more and more people in the Catholic world are starting to back off the word abuse scandal. I'm still going to use it but I think we're starting to realize that it's a lot bigger than that. It's not just abuse scandal.
Right,
for the reasons you just stated, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. No one's being, very few of these are little kids that are being like forcibly raped, which is obviously horrible. We know.
It's absolutely horrid. And I also want to say, like, you know, we have consent. I don't want consent laws and ages of consent to go away. I'd like them to go up. You know, I don't want it to be that, well, the altar boy was 17, so, you know, he consented. No, a 17-year-old does not have the frontal lobes of his brain formed yet. he's still greatly under the influence of leadership, paternal figures, spiritual leaders, etc. He can be corrupted. I think even a 19, 20, 21-year-old can fall under the evil influence of a man and be corrupted. And we know, if you read anything like Joseph Scambra or anybody, the homosexual community preys upon the younger man, whether that younger man be 16 or whether he be 23. They're looking for the impressionable men to recruit and to corrupt. So,
yeah, it's an interesting point. It is an interesting point. And it's something that's one of those issues where it's like, you know, that it is exceedingly gray. At what point do we actually, you know, as the late, not great Justice Oliver Wendell Holmes, who's like a genius, the dark genius, often said, nature abhors distinctions of kind. It tends to have left us with only distinctions of degree. The nice thing for this wider debate now being had between like LifeSite magazine and America magazine is DSM-5, who is an adverse witness, one of their mm-hmm. witnesses, has left us with a nice, tidy, convenient, neatly wrapped package of this distinction, where even assuming that I probably agree with what you just said, Dr. Marshall, it's a nice distinction that if it's prepubescent, it has nothing to do with the sexuality of the aggressor. If it's postpubescent, even if that's a postpubescent 12-year-old or 13-year-old, that does cut ice. It does accomplish work in telling us about the sexuality of the aggressor. And if that's the case, then point and match, because this is not just the argument, the weakest argument I've ever heard, by the way. I've heard a lot of bad ones, but the argument is, well, priests only have access to boys, so it's kind of like prison. That's why the occurrence of altar boys is so much higher. One, we have these ridiculous altar servant girl altar boys, or whatever you call them, now anyway, right? So if a priest truly is heterosexual, you know, then it's a horrible thought, but he could select an altar girl. Number two, the analogy to prison does not hold up. It might hold up a little better if we were dealing with cloistered religious women.
Right.
These are not cloistered religious women. Yeah. I see these them all the time at Costco.
They got their Lincoln. Yeah, they're at Costco.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're on vacations. I mean,
they can go to Miami and hook up with a dude in traffic, right? Yeah. We know that. So
yeah, it's been
horrible,
done.
Horrible, ridiculous argument. Everyone, if you have the stomach for it, go out and read this argument, because it is sort of the mantelpiece of where the left or Catholic National Catholic Reporter, they've been making the same argument since summertime. Why this is not a quote unquote gay issue. Really? If you walk up on two dudes doing it, that's a gay issue. It's that simple. It's a facial case.
Yep.
And they're hilarious arguments to see them try to spin out.
Absolutely. You know, related to this, kind of moving a little bit more into the middle, because, you know, National Catholic Reporter / Distorter in America magazine, for people out there, those are like the liberal rags of the Catholic left.
Yeah.
You know, it's just insanity, right? There's it's heterodox. And then you have like your far right rad trads, and, you know, they're basically saying there is no Pope and the church is over and just get ready for the end times. Right.
Right.
That's obviously not the take that we're proposing here. We believe that the church is the church. She has been corrupted. She is sick. And we need to be like the ancient Maccabean warriors from First and Second Maccabees. Like, hey, we call out, we rally the troops, we go into the wilderness, we make a plan, and we go into Jerusalem and take back the temple and cleanse it. That's the story. Be the Maccabee. And there's a really good piece that came out yesterday by Monsignor Charles Pope. He's a priest in the Archdiocese of D.C. And the name of this article, it came out on the National Catholic Register, which has some good stuff in it. It's called "A Cry of the Heart to Our Bishops, Please Restore Order to the Church." And he says, holy orders, it's called orders because it orders the church. It's not disordered, it's ordered. It's like, wow, good, you know, Monsignor, great point. You know, we always talk about holy orders. Why is it called order? There has to be order in the church. It can't be chaos. And then he gives sort of a 12 theses, 12 points. I want to read them off really quick because I think they're all great. He says, first off, number one, the faith is openly betrayed and denied by renegade bishops. Agree. Yes. Ding, ding, ding. Number two, teaching is on holiday. Silence in the face of error is rampant, and listening without limit is called magisterial. So yeah, the bishops aren't, these are all, he says, for the episcopate. Bishops aren't teaching. You know, I can think of maybe 3 to 6 bishops who have actually a teaching ministry, but otherwise they're CEOs.
Point one is actively teaching error. Point two is the omission of good teaching, which is what we were talking about earlier. Right. Yeah.
So the only time you hear from your bishops is the annual appeal. Hey, we need some more money. We got all these great ministries. Give us money.
Right.
Why? All right. Next one. There are wandering celebrity priests who promote LGBT agenda without any reference to repentance or chastity. We're seeing this more and more in America and in Canada. James Martin is obviously the main one he's referring to here. And by the way, you'll notice I never say Father James Martin, just James Martin.
Right.
He says next, Catholic colleges openly teach dissent without any correction from the bishops.
Right.
Not just Notre Dame. Look at Georgetown. All these places, man. Even Catholic University of America. Hotbeds of heresy. It is the role of the bishops to teach and to govern these universities. Next one. Catholic colleges openly teach dissent without... Oh, I just said that one. Sorry. Liturgical abuses are abounded and remain uncorrected for decades. This one kills me. You hear bishops. Yeah. You know, there was a bishop who said, you can't receive communion kneeling in this certain parish. Right? Even though they had the facilities to do it. So he, you know, he stopped it. No kneeling for communion. Meanwhile, there's 10 other parishes who have all kinds of monkey, weird stuff going on liturgically. They are never stopped. Yes. Same bishop, same diocese, parishes are within 5 miles of each other. The bishop steps in heavy-handed, no kneeling for communion. Meanwhile, you know, there's just Eucharistic abuse happening.
At one of our local parishes, my wife she was wearing a veil, it's a Novus Ordo, and the priest tried, you know, I had to intervene and change that around, but he tried to tell her not to take the Eucharist on the mouth for reasons of health. He said it's cold season. It was last April.
Yeah.
They try every trick they can to make you desecrate the Eucharist.
That's right.
Take it on the mouth anyway, wear your veil. Yeah. Yeah. It's rampant.
Right. So, next one. In the seminaries and within the priesthood, homosexual predation by an apparent network of priests has gone on for years, along with cover-ups, denials, and secret payouts. This is mainstream Monsignor Pope. He writes for the Archdiocesan website.
He's smart, but he's not always been on the cutting edge. Sometimes he's been a little bit of a...
This is not rad trad.
No, this is a smart kind of mainstream guy. By the way, in that LifeSite article on this note, it talks about the fallacy being pushed that abuse is way down now. It's not. It was down for a little blip in 2002, 2003, but the bishops have gone lax again. And the numbers bear this out.
Yep.
It's, we should show that article up there, but yeah, go ahead.
Okay. So the next one, the number of states initiating grand jury investigations is increasing daily. The federal investigation into abuse by Catholic priests now includes every diocese in the country. It's like, bishops, there's a problem. If states and now the federal government are having to hold you accountable, you guys are rotten.
Right.
Next one, and this is, we never hear this one either, but we got to start shouting it from the rooftops. We said in our last video, mass attendance has been declining for years, leading to the closing of numerous parishes and schools. It's true, man. Baptisms are down. Vocations to women religious are down.
Way down.
Church weddings, way down. Procreation of kids, way down. Baptism of infants, way down. Converts, down. Almost every single metric you could use in the Catholic Church were down. in America.
Right.
In America. You know, think about this, Tim. You know, let's say you're like a regional manager for like McDonald's franchises, you know, and you've been there for 10 years. And corporate comes and says, hey, you know what? We've noticed that 60% of your locations are struggling and, you know, you've had to close down 20% of them. And, you know, there's been a bunch of legal cases because people are getting sick when they eat your food. You know, you're not clean. Right. Do you think that guy's going to say, but, you know, hey, you're mercy. You're good. Pat on the back.
Of course not.
You're canned, dude. In the real world, if your numbers are down, even for a quarter, like here's the real world, Catholic people. If your numbers are down for Q2, you're on the street. Maybe they'll say, okay, get them up by Q3 or Q4. Or you're done. No Christmas bonus. You're out. That's the world that men like us live in.
Right.
If you're not getting quarterly projections, you're out of here.
You might get till the end of the next quarter, but they'll say, what's your plan? What's your model you're going to be using to rectify this? And if you go, more of the same, you know, more of the same things that cause the sickness, you get out. Get off our porch. And
yet these bishops for years, for decades, have been overseeing the decline. And no one from corporate comes to them and says, hey, we noticed that church weddings are like from when you became bishop to now are down by about 30%. That's really bad. Your Catholic people, when they're getting married, aren't coming to church to get married. Why is that? What are you doing to fix that?
Right. Well, Rad Trad's also point at this, and I you got to throw them some credit because there was a major study done in like 72 or 73, right after the Novus Ordo had been released. And church attendance plummeted over the course of 3 or 4 years. It plummeted.
I've seen that.
Yeah, it's devastating. It's what we call good statistical analysis, and no one talks about it. It's this omission stuff, you know, evidence of, you know, a conspiracy of silence.
Yeah. It's devastating. Look at the graph in America. When does mass attendance? And actually, Monsignor Pope says here, in the last 60 years, and it has been in the last 60 years that you see mass attendance and then boom, it just
pitfalls.
Yeah. You know, it's kind of like, you know, Coca-Cola. They're like, hey, we're doing new Coke. Everybody hated it. But they'd be like, hey, new Coke, new Coke, new Coke. It's awesome. Everybody getting, no, they're like, okay, let's go back to the Coca-Cola classic.
Yeah. Like, yeah. Why?
Because you know what? There was someone at corporate saying, our numbers are down this quarter. What are we going to do? Let's go back to Coke classic. Good idea. Marketing, get on that. Church for 60 years, we've been saying new Coke is better.
New Coke's awesome. I used to call the Novus Ordo new Coke, and a lot of people got mad at me. So no, new order, new Coke, it makes a lot of sense. Yeah. Except we stick with it. Like you say, it's not the business model that's healthy.
Right. Next one, scandals continue to rise. The Vatican Bank has been plagued with scandal for years. A drug-fueled homosexual orgy reportedly took place in the summer of 2017 in the apartment of a high-ranking Vatican prelate. There have been seemingly arbitrary dismissals of bishops and priests, both within Vatican and elsewhere. We discussed that today in the show. This is a big one. I'm surprised that Monsignor Pope said this one. He says, the Holy Father himself is surrounded by questionable figures who are at the very heart of the current crises. So he's not talking about just McCarrick, but, you know, the C9, you know, his super cardinals.
Right.
You know, almost half of those guys are having serious allegations they're dealing with at back home.
Right.
Your cabinet of cardinals can't be full of corrupt guys while you're out there preaching zero tolerance.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's too stranger than fiction.
All right. Number 11. In response to the crises from Rome, there has been silence, name-calling of those requesting investigations, and only occasionally promises to look into the matters. We saw this at the Youth Synod.
Right.
Don't ask us about that. We're not talking about that. We're talking about youth. Youth are being corrupted by cardinals and bishops and priests. We want to know about that. Well, we're not talking about that.
That's not youth. That's youth related. Yeah, it is. Remember that smile?
Yeah.
He sat back like this.
Yeah.
Like creep.
Yeah. And then the final one, and this is it. The faithful are dismayed by the chaos. Even prior to the current sexual and financial scandals, the general stance of this pontificate has been artfully described as weaponized ambiguity. Man, the senior Pope is getting, he just pulled out AR-15 right there.
I like that weaponized ambiguity. That's not mine. I'm taking it.
The faithful are dismayed. You know, I attend a FSSP, Priestly Fraternity of St. Peter Parish, 1962 Latin Mass. I'll tell you, over the last year, place is getting packed. It's always been full. Is getting packed. And people are just like, man, the church is messed up. I need a refuge for my family. I want to go hear a good sermon.
Right.
You know, I don't want to, I want to hear magisterial truth, historic Catholic orthodoxy. I want to go to confession and be challenged and the priest call me to account, become a saint. And people are realizing there's chaos out there and there's the weaponized ambiguity.
Love
Where
it.
Can I go and not get ambiguity? Shoot it to me straight. So Monsignor Pope, man, props, standing O on this one, man.
Yeah. I mean, he's written stuff that I've liked before. I think Monsignor Pope had pieces in the Claremont Review of Books that I used to read. And I was like, this guy's sharp. Yeah, he's a smarty pants. I'm glad. I'm always happy. You want to make me happy when smarty pants is red pill. That's the combination.
This is very red pill, man. And he says, oh, this is good too. Here's his conclusion. If my picture of disorder is too extreme, I beg your mercy.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
Some of the facts I presented are erroneous, if my conclusion is too strong in some area or regarding some particular person, I repent. Love it. You know, I love to see the winners, the champions of orthodoxy, like Pope and Vegan O, they're the ones saying, I repent.
Right.
Did McCarrick ever use the word repent? Still waiting for that one. Nothing.
Never in his life. Yeah.
You got anything to repent about? No, they don't talk about that. They don't use the language of the Bible. Right. And here are the guys who are calling a spade. And they're saying, hey, look, if I'm making mistakes, I repent. But you know, if I made mistakes in the past and didn't blow the whistle when I should have, I'm sorry. I'm worried about my own soul. I know I'm going to face Jesus. I'm going to make it right. So great article. Y'all can go read it at the National Catholic Register. I think we can close up there, Tim.
Yeah.
So thanks for watching. I want to do a Latin word of the day. I used to always do the Latin word of the day, so we'll close with that. As always, please subscribe. Please like the video. When you subscribe, hit the little bell. That'll notify you every time we put out another video. Also, please share it on Facebook and Twitter. And the Latin word of the day is sacerdos. You know that one, Tim?
Yeah, priest.
Yeah. Priest. Yeah. Literally, dos, from like the word do, dare, meaning to give, to donate. And sacerdos, the sacred. The priest gives the sacred. He gives it to us, the people, but he also offers the sacred to God. So there's that mediation there. So that's sacerdos, where we get the word sacerdotal. Hope you enjoyed that. Again, like and subscribe, share it around. And till next time, be the Maccabee. Go into the wilderness, rally the troops. God bless.